products, such as Microsoft Expedia, Travel, Investor, Finance, and Sidewalk, Leisure. Learning from mistakes and constantly improving products is a key in all successful companies. Listening to customers is a big part of that effort. You have to study what customers say about their problems with your products and stay tuned in to what they want, extrapolating from leading-edge buyers to predict future requirements. In software, customers always want more. If you improve software reliability, customers say, great, but what about scalability? If you improve scalability, they want more integration. Our customers are always upping the ante, as they should. Listening to the customers means hearing their complaints about current product shortcomings. But getting bad news from customers, passed all the way to the product design groups, is surprisingly hard to do. Most companies have an inefficient chain of people and paper between customers and the people who can make major improvements. When the customer data finally reaches the product design group, it often isn't easy for the team to digest its significance and prioritize it accordingly. All of the delays taken together mean that improvements don't happen as fast as they should. I recommend the following approach to integrating customer complaints and wish lists into product and service development. Focus on your most unhappy customers. Use technology to gather rich information on their unhappy experiences with your product and to find out what they want you to put into the product. Use technology to drive the news to the right people in a hurry. If you do these three things, you'll turn those draining, bad news experiences into an exhilarating process of improving your product or service. Unhappy customers are always a concern. They're also your greatest opportunity. Adopting a learning posture, rather than a negative defensive posture, can make customer complaints your best source of significant quality improvements. Adopting the right technology will give you the power to capture and convert complaints into better products and services fast. Giving customer guarantees some teeth. Hotels and airlines usually offer a satisfaction guarantee. If you're unhappy with the company's service, you receive a discount or an upgrade that's good the next time. The satisfaction guarantee is actually a sales tool designed to get you to come back. A radically different approach comes from Promise Hotels based in Memphis, Tennessee. Promise, which generated $5 billion in revenue in 1997, has a family of hotels. The best known are the Hampton Inns, Embassy Suites, and DoubleTree Inns. Promise was the first hotel chain to guarantee no charge for your current visit if you have any complaint about your stay. And any Promise employee can make good on that guarantee. A front desk clerk, a maid, a maintenance engineer, anybody. For obvious reasons, customers love the Promise guarantee. Debbie Fields, president and chief executive officer of Mrs. Fields, the chain of cookie and baked goods stores, stayed at a Hampton Inn one time and mentioned at checkout that there hadn't been any soap or towels in her room when she'd arrived. The desk person ripped up her bill and told her the stay was free. She was so impressed that she made Hampton Inn her company's corporate hotel and ultimately ended up on the Hampton Promise board. A guarantee of this kind is not just a feel-good device for the customer, although making the customer feel good certainly makes sense. The larger business reason for offering such a guarantee is to create an environment in which customer complaints drive service improvements. The rationale is laid out in the book, Service Breakthroughs, Changing the Rules of the Game, that a guarantee encourages the entire organization to focus on customers' definitions of good service, not on executives' assumptions about what good service is. Reliable data about the firm's service delivery system helps identify failure points, and the guarantee invariably injects a sense of urgency into all of these activities. The end result, of course, is unshakable customer loyalty. A no-questions-asked guarantee from a service company such as Promise makes complaints mean something. Customers like the guarantee going in, even if they're a little skeptical about how hard it will be to get you to deliver on it. And when you do deliver on it, you have a very gratified customer. Equally important, the guarantee creates a financial incentive to fix the underlying problem right away. Because it costs the hotel money immediately, the problem doesn't get overlooked. It doesn't get filed away. Tying complaints to immediate payouts lowers the water and exposes the rocks relating to service quality. Because every employee is empowered to act on the guarantee, everybody is on the hook for quality. The everyday hotel workers, who make or break quality and who can administer the guarantee, have more pride in their own jobs and pride in the hotel. Peer pressure comes into play within the different groups to hold up their end. And if you're going to give all hotel employees the power to make a customer's stay free, a lot of power for service personnel, then you'd better train them all to do a good job. When Promise first proposed this policy, some franchisees said, "You're nuts. Deadbeats will just take advantage of us. They'll kill us." So Promise inaugurated the policy with a mix of company-owned and franchised hotels. It turned out that refunds were much lower than anticipated, averaging 0.3% of revenues. Promise also discovered that intent to return was 50% higher for customers who invoked the guarantee than for other customers. Franchisees quickly got with the program. Using technology to back up guarantees. How can you put your money where your mouth is like this and not go broke? Technology. Promise uses information technology to track unhappy customer experiences and convert them into continuous service improvements, and to prevent too many exercises of its guarantee. Complaints are tracked centrally on the chain's corporate database, so Promise management can see where the complaints are coming from. Promise can quickly identify any hotels experiencing the same repeated complaint, say, unfriendly desk clerks or dirty rooms, so the company can work with hotel managers to fix the weak point. The same technology gives Promise a way to track any customers who might be tempted to take advantage of the chain's generosity. The company can quickly identify anybody who goes from hotel to hotel claiming poor service and getting free rooms. When such a pattern develops, Promise immediately sends a nice letter to the customer lamenting the fact that the hotel chain can't meet his quality standards and inviting him to stay in a competitor's facility. A central customer database also enables Promise to track the paths of the chain's favorite customers, the regular guests. If you're a business person who stays at 4 or 5 Promise properties on a regular basis, and you suddenly stop going to any of them, you'll receive a special promotion to entice you back. The customer database of about 30 million records, which is updated every night, helps Promise personalize a stay. Everybody, the hotel, the travel agent, and central reservations, can see the individual customer's preferences. When you arrive at a Promise hotel, the receptionist knows that you prefer a non-smoking room, or a double instead of a king-size bed, or that your allergies require you to have special pillows. Promise designed and is implementing an end-to-end infrastructure for information flow. This infrastructure has enabled the hotel chain to use its information not just to handle reservations or support guarantees, but to extend the use to operational and revenue management systems that enable hotel employees and managers to make better decisions and improve hotel operations. Because of the comprehensive way in which they assist franchisees in their day-to-day business operations, Promise calls the management systems a hotel manager in a box. Training costs for a front desk person, a position with 100% annual turnover, has gone from $11,000 per employee to $3,000. Instead of spending 2 weeks in formal classroom training in Memphis, new front desk employees now spend only 2 to 3 hours in training at their hotel properties, moving Promise closer to its goal of day one performance. Employees in every hotel have a single way to do all of their many tasks, from conference room scheduling to accounting to check-in. The check-out process has been reduced from 20 screens to 3. Individual hotel managers now have access to operational and revenue management information that helps them track data that used to be available only to the corporate executives in Memphis. A franchisee who owns 10 Embassy Suites, for example, can log on to a PC every morning and see how every one of his hotels did the night before, how they stand against plan, and which came in under plan. If the numbers for one of the hotels don't look good, the franchisee can fire off an email to his hotel managers to get everybody involved in devising plans for boosting occupancies or revenues. The operational folks at Promise can see the same information and get in on the collaboration, too, offering assistance to properties that are lagging. As business needs change, the PC architecture will enable new applications to be developed at modest incremental cost, further integrating the information and activities in Promise's corporate offices and franchises. Booking system gets smarter with every transaction. Promise franchisees now have access to corporate revenue data that helps them determine how to price and sell their rooms. Using chain-wide booking data and a hotel metric called Revenue Per Available Room, RevPAR, Promise's System 21 predicts the best rate that franchisees can get for any room, any night. Monitoring current availability and the number of days left before the reservation date, System 21 compares these figures with historic usage. If reservations are slow, the system will make more low-priced rooms available. If bookings are brisk, it will keep more rooms at the standard price. The software can compare the opportunity cost between a two-night booking today against the likelihood of a four-night booking beginning tomorrow. It can alert the clerk that bookings will be slow tonight and recommend that a frequent guest be upgraded to a better suite. The system advises the reservation clerk on all kinds of booking decisions. In a business where the front desk staff are often put on the spot by rate shoppers, insisting that they can get a better price across the street, System 21 relieves staff and customers of the need to haggle over room rates. Promised staff can quote the lowest possible rate without sacrificing profitability. Customers are assured that they're getting the best rate for their date and situation. Every booking and every transaction goes into the central database so that Promise and franchisee staff increase their aggregate wisdom and make smarter decisions. It gives our franchisees a more educated basis from which to make moment-to-moment booking decisions rather than just shooting from the hip or guessing, says Promise CIO Tim Harvey. We want each franchisee to get the benefit of the entire chain's learning. Capturing and converting bad news to good. Most retail product companies take a different approach to guarantees than service companies with their perishable inventory of only so many rooms or seats for a given date. Microsoft offers the common 30-day money-back product guarantee to our customers. Like promised, though, we have recognized the importance of using technology to capture and convert customer feedback into improvements as fast as possible. We began collecting data about customer problems from support engineers in 1985 and began the steps to create a regular feedback loop in 1991. First, we used a phone system and then developed different tools for gathering data from sources such as email, internet news groups, and the web. Then we began to consolidate the data. We're now in our third generation of computer-based customer feedback tools. The team specifically charged with using our customer feedback tools to convert bad news to good is the Product Improvement, PI team, in Microsoft Technical Services. Product Improvement is the voice of the customer. The people in this group sift through a lot of bad news, and some good news, all day long. They focus exclusively on what our customers are telling us that we might not want to hear, but should. They analyze customer feedback and lobby on behalf of the customers for fixes and new product features to improve the customer's experience with our software. Although they sit in the customer support group, they're not in the customer support business. They're in the product improvement business. The product improvement team has a tool for incident management and analysis that makes sense of 7 to 8 million pieces of raw customer data per year. 6 million pieces of data come from support incidents, mostly by phone, but also from the web. 1 million come in from Premier, our more sophisticated support service for enterprise customers. The rest of the customer data comes from a variety of other sources. Support engineers enter problems reported via phone into the database as they handle calls. Online problem reports go directly into the database. Emails, already electronic, are easily converted into a structured format for entry. From this database, the data is extracted in statistically valid random samplings for each product and scrubbed for accuracy and categorization. Because each problem report is weighed for both frequency and the labor involved in resolving the problem each time it surfaces, the most difficult issues bubble to the top, either by topic and product, such as the number of network problems experienced by users of Windows, or by topic and groups of products, such as whether file management is a concern across all of Microsoft Office. Not all of the customer feedback is negative. We also get lots of wishes. Some customer wishes we can't do anything about, as with the guy who asked for a date with actress Sandra Bullock. Other wishes we could help with but choose not to, like the ones by people who ask for a tour of my house. Then there are those that just baffle us, like the one from a fellow who wished he could get Microsoft Flight Simulator to fly him on the computer to the island of Fiji. We finally discovered that the numbers he was entering into the program came from a map on his shower curtain and bore no relationship to earthly coordinates. We pay much more attention to customer wishes involving new product features, which pour in from customers and from our sales representatives and technical account managers, over the web, by email, by fax, and by mail, at a rate of more than 10,000 per month. By analyzing the aggregate data, the PI team develops prioritized lists of problems and recommends to each development team a variety of solutions, including new product features. This structured feedback gets to our development teams early enough in the development cycle for appropriate corrections or new features to be included in the next release. For example, we shipped Internet Explorer 4.0 in September 1997. 2 months later, we shipped a minor upgrade, primarily to deliver features that made Internet Explorer easier to use for people with disabilities. But that upgrade also contained, among other fixes, the solutions for 6 of the top 10 customer complaints from that brief interval between the two releases. We acted so quickly because every morning the PI team ran a report to analyze the most severe and time-consuming problems for customers and presented its findings to the Internet Explorer team, which would assign developers to solve the biggest problems. As a result of the fixes, our support call volume dropped by 20% after the upgrade shipped. On a larger scale, and over a long time frame, this kind of monitoring and response goes on for all of our major products. The process is constant and iterative. We also use our corporate intranet to disseminate information to all interested parties, integrating web pages with email. For our major products, any employee can go to our website to see the current status of the data on customer complaints and requests. When a product is released, PI posts reports on immediate customer reaction. More detailed reports are posted monthly, organized by major product groups. These monthly reports include a problem's symptoms, a short-term solution, recommendations for a longer-term fix, and any response from the product group. Microsoft subscribers get email with links to new monthly reports as they are done. Other employees will see the most current reports when they browse the intranet site. The most frequent visitors are the program managers, developers, and testers for various products. Writers of online articles regularly review the site to ensure that they develop content focused on the most important issues to customers. And another team uses the site to evaluate what new software tools customers may need. The status of customer issues is included in the major quarterly product reviews that go to senior management. Helping users step safely through problems. In recent years, Microsoft and other software vendors have been moving from a base of technically sophisticated customers to consumers who care less about technical wizardry than about basic ease of use. As software becomes increasingly prevalent in business, more and more employees who aren't necessarily savvy about technical issues are using computers. And many companies that would never consider themselves to be in the software business at all are getting involved by virtue of publishing web pages and communicating electronically with customers. For less sophisticated customers, it's not good enough that we're merely prompt in helping to fix bugs or providing smart tools to solve problems. They want us to keep things simple in the first place. A goal for companies in many industries now is to use the customer feedback loop to build more intelligence into every aspect of their products, so that there's less and less occasion for bad news to begin with. As they move into electronic commerce, a lot of businesses will have to start using electronic tools to furnish the kind of customer support we're working toward at Microsoft. They'll need to recognize that customers, at least for the near future, will hesitate when they consider purchasing any electronic product or service. How hard will it be to install? Will it work the way I expect it to? If I have problems, how will I get help? Also, users associate one experience with another. If they have trouble setting up their basic online service, they'll be reluctant to set up online banking. If they have problems conducting e-commerce at one site, they'll assume that the problems are a function of e-commerce technology in general, not of a poor website. Error message help. We could eliminate a lot of customer help calls at Microsoft by fixing such simple things as error messages. It's pretty shocking how confusing or cryptic they are. Here's one of my favorites, which perhaps one user in 1,000 might understand. The DHCP client could not obtain an IP address. If you want to see DHCP messages in the future, choose yes. Otherwise, choose no. I love that, otherwise choose no. The message assumes that everybody understands the meaning of DHCP, a method for allocating computer addresses on a network, but that nobody understands the difference between yes and no. I didn't know what this message meant the first time I saw it, so, like other users, I chose no. I never wanted to see this particular message again. I showed this error message in a recent slide presentation while making the point that we need to push for simplicity in our software, and a few people thought I'd run into a technical problem in the middle of the speech. We have fixed this message in our latest version of Windows. Have you ever seen the error message that says the system can't associate a file with the right application? That one is really frustrating. If the system doesn't know what files go with what programs, how likely is it that you will? And how many different error messages have you gotten when you've tried unsuccessfully to connect to a web page? Could anybody, on the basis of one of those error messages, figure out the real reason for the failure? The problem is not just that the messages are confusing. It's that the system as a whole is not smart enough to help the user through a problem. Instead of simply alerting the user to some inscrutable error, the software needs to fix the problem automatically, or walk the user through the necessary steps to fix it. We now have software wizards, for instance, that help users through printing problems or give users shortcuts to certain procedures, and we plan to provide more wizards in the future. Creating a customer feedback loop. Using a guarantee to focus corporate attention on customers and using information technology to ensure quick response to customer problems is a strategy that works for Promise Hotels, and it will work equally well for any other service company. Using information technology to instantly drive customer complaints into product development groups, as we've done at Microsoft, is a strategy that will work for any product company. Whether you sell insurance or real estate, or you make trucks or breakfast cereal, the principle of using digital systems to tie customers back to your core business is central to future success. You can collect information from customers even if you don't have a digital system, but you can't analyze it quickly. You can't make non-digital information integral to the development process for a service or a product. Non-digital systems won't enable you to route information directly to product developers. Digital systems give companies the ability to do all these things and transform into adaptive learning organisms. Customer service changes from an add-on activity to an integral part of product development. The process has to begin with a corporate decision to put the customer at the center of the solution. Once you do that, digital information enables you to create a tight loop that runs between customer needs and your company's reactions. Promise can focus its staff on the problems that customers most care about. At Microsoft, we can put our software engineers to work on the problems that are giving customers the most grief, rather than on problems the engineers think are the most technically interesting. Always going back to the customer. If you accept customer feedback electronically, you need to be prepared to answer quickly. When a customer mails a letter to a company, he or she doesn't expect a reply for a week. But when a customer emails a query to your company, he or she knows that the email arrives in a matter of minutes, if not seconds. Business protocol is to respond to email within a few hours or overnight. A few days is slow. If you take weeks to reply, consumers will take their business to a more responsive company. Because email is so much easier to send than paper mail, you're likely to get many more responses, too. So when you ask for electronic feedback, make sure you have the staff and the internal systems in place to handle it promptly. Listen to your customers and take their bad news as an opportunity to turn your failures into the concrete improvements they want. Companies that invest early in digital nervous systems to capture, analyze, and capitalize on customer input will differentiate themselves from competition. You should examine customer complaints more often than company financials. And your digital systems should help you convert bad news to improved products and services. About those longer phone calls. Electronic feedback loops will change the nature of your existing customer support patterns. As we've rolled out our online support systems at Microsoft, we've discovered that our website is handling most of the easy questions from customers. Phone support now handles the most difficult calls. We're getting fewer and fewer calls per product unit sold, but each call is averaging more time. At first, you might be dismayed by such a trend because longer calls usually mean that your support problems must be getting worse. But in this situation, longer calls are a good sign. Your internet site is handling the novice and intermediate questions, and more difficult problems go to your support staff, which has the training and experience to solve them. Dell Computer has experienced the same phenomenon as it's provided more and more support online. I believe the trend to longer but fewer calls will show up for many companies that offer online support, regardless of product. As a result, you may need more experienced support personnel on the phone than in the past, but they'll also be helping customers in more profound ways. Business lessons. Embrace bad news to learn where you need the most improvement. Your most unhappy customers are your greatest source of learning. implement policy and business structures that tie complaints directly to a fast solution. Diagnosing your digital nervous system. Can you capture and analyze customer feedback electronically to find out how customers want you to improve your product or service? Do your digital systems enable you to quickly deliver customer feedback to the employees who can fix the problem? Can you respond to electronic customer feedback promptly? Can you drive simple customer queries to your website and reserve your phone support for difficult customer questions? Chapter 12. Know Your Numbers. To achieve nirvana, you must have perfect information about every customer order, new and old, and every asset in your business, both permanent physical assets and various inventory components. And guess what? The only way to secure, maintain, and harvest this information is through the aggressive use of information technology. J. William Gurley, Above the Crowd. If you take your car into a Jiffy Lube station for an oil change and ask for 10W-40, a good oil for hot weather driving, the service technician will first check his PC terminal before doing anything to your car to make certain that the manufacturer recommends 10W-40 and not another grade of oil for that make and model. In fact, the technician can tell you all of the manufacturer's recommendations for service intervals and for the vehicle parts that Jiffy Lube might service: oil, filters, headlights, windshield wipers, transmission fluid, grease, even the number of grease fittings. All from a PC-based point-of-sale system in the service bay. Cars get in and out fast. A typical Jiffy Lube outlet services 45 cars a day and is able to do so more quickly and efficiently with the new system. Technicians don't have to look things up in print manuals anymore, and the system helps managers calculate the number of employees needed to handle traffic patterns for the time of the day and the day of the week. It cuts back on overtime. Most important, it reduces lines. In this business, when customers see a line, they drive away. The old paper system was a productivity bottleneck. 3 months after your visit, you'll get a service reminder for your next oil change, one of the 300,000 reminders that Jiffy Lube sends out a week. Having a historical record of customer service that enables timely customer contact is a prerequisite for doing business in many service industries today. Jiffy Lube's system monitors the number of miles driven between visits and, after a couple of visits, learns about the customer's driving habits. Knowing the timing and nature of each customer interaction means that a company can take advantage of cross-selling opportunities. Jiffy Lube was the world's number one franchisor of fast lube centers, but unprofitable when the Pennzoil Company bought it in 1991. In 1997, Jiffy Lube earned $25 million, the highest earnings in its history, and an increase of 14% over 1996 earnings, on gross revenues of $765 million. Jiffy Lube serviced 21 million cars, an increase of 1.2 million over 1996. Driving this new success is a daily flow of information from each store to headquarters and back. Customer service information from each of the 600 company-owned and 1,000 franchisee-owned outlets is uploaded to Jiffy Lube headquarters in Houston each night. With the merger of Quaker State's Q-Lube stores, the total number of outlets will increase to more than 2,100 locations. The data goes into multiple servers, including the company's 120-gigabyte customer database, which was recently cut over from a mainframe to a PC server. Headquarters does immediate analysis on a number of operational measures: number of cars handled, costs, revenues, and actual versus projected profits, and on sales trends. Beginning as early as 5 a.m., up-to-date performance data is available to all Jiffy Lube managers nationwide, who can log on to the database to get performance figures. Each manager uses the information on a daily basis to see current revenue status, average ticket price, the time required to do each job, and overall throughput for the day. Corporate management can see historic comparisons of figures for all Jiffy Lube centers. Franchisees with multiple stores can see consolidated activity in all of their holdings. Jiffy Lube's regional managers, who typically supervise 10 outlets each, use the operational data to help their outlet managers build their businesses and be more profitable and efficient. The system is quite flexible. If a regional manager develops a special report, say to detect fraud or abnormalities, it can be sent electronically to different outlets for local analysis. The Jiffy Lube manager usually isn't an expert in market research, so headquarters employees do marketing and trend analysis. The information they use includes statistics, maps, and profiles of Jiffy Lube customers. The data show sales by different neighborhoods, including neighborhoods in which the Jiffy Lube outlet isn't as effective as it might be, or which neighborhoods are statistically ripe for a promotion. If customers are bypassing a neighborhood Jiffy Lube center for another one farther away, the system gives Jiffy Lube an opportunity to investigate. The pattern might be a result of natural traffic flow, or it might signal specific problems at the closer store. Jiffy Lube is beginning to use its information system to help with promotions. A manager who looks at the weather forecast on a Tuesday afternoon and decides to run a wiper blade special in a certain market can have the system updated with the promotional details and pricing for the local stores first thing Wednesday. In the future, follow-up information will help the manager determine whether the promotion was profitable enough to try someplace else, or whether a special on transmission services was more successful. Its extensive demographic data analysis and mapping software also helps Jiffy Lube scout and develop potential outlet locations. The software plots existing Jiffy Lube locations, competitor locations, and potential new sites according to the demographics of sites that have already been successful. The company can overlay a map with market data to see where sizable numbers of prospective customers don't have a nearby Jiffy Lube service center. That kind of analysis strengthens the company's relationship with its franchisees, since Jiffy Lube can provide the franchisee with data on land costs, proximity to other stations, and other variables that he would not ordinarily have. Today, information about the individual customer is stored in a database at each local Jiffy Lube store. Depending on size, each service center has a database of 8,000 to 50,000 customers. Jiffy Lube has an initiative to consolidate its 18 million vehicle records and 85 million service records into a national database that is connected to each store. A customer will soon be able to drive into any Jiffy Lube service center in the United States, and the outlet will know that vehicle's service history. When any service is done, the data will be updated in a single place and available to outlets all over the country. The ability to perform this kind of customer service has changed the way Jiffy Lube does business. It doesn't sit back and wait for customers to come in. It learns as much as possible about its customers and markets and adapts accordingly. Jiffy Lube finds out the kinds of promotions that customers respond to and then ties promotions to customer demographics. The result is more targeted promotions. It might send a certain kind of promotion to customers with a certain income within 2 miles of a particular outlet, for example. The company also compiles data on the preferences of individual customers so that it can send service reminders and other promotions via email to customers who prefer electronic rather than paper reminders. Handling the reminders via email will make it possible for Jiffy Lube to personalize promotions and cut costs while improving convenience for customers. Jiffy Lube is also considering putting up a website where a customer, whether an individual or a fleet manager, will be able to get an online Jiffy Lube vehicle service history and manufacturer's recommendations. The website would provide details about any current promotion and encourage a visit to the nearest Jiffy Lube store. Jiffy Lube has the infrastructure in place to do all of these things because it built its flow of information around customer data. Knowing your numbers for shaping your business. Know your numbers is a fundamental precept of business. You need to gather your business's data at every step of the way and in every interaction with your customers, with your partners, too. Then you need to understand what the data means. I'm not saying that you should be single-mindedly driven by bottom-line concerns. I'm saying that you should objectively understand every aspect of your business that you can. If you're considering trading off short-term profits for long-term gains, for instance, you need to know as precisely as possible the cost of that trade-off. Companies can use the data they collect to improve the efficiency of their core businesses, strengthen their relationships with both customers and partners, extend their businesses in new ways, and develop better service and new products. The Jiffy Lube example illustrates the two dimensions of using customer data. The first is aggregating data for statistics that track trends and patterns on which to base analysis, planning, and decisions. The second is collecting detailed information on the individual customer so that you can provide personalized service. Most of the examples in the rest of this chapter illustrate both ways of using customer data, often from the same set of data. By creating a flow of digital information from start to finish, businesses are able to create tight loops among knowledge management, commerce, and business operations. To use either kind of data effectively, you need to capture it digitally at the outset and analyze it in digital form at every juncture of your business process. Every juncture includes not just what happens within your corporate walls, but also what happens with both your customers and your suppliers. Knowing your numbers can help you transform all of your business relationships and give you a significant competitive advantage. Collecting your data. To ensure accuracy, get your data into digital form at the point of origin. Initial digital data entry reduces re-entry labor and virtually eliminates errors. When a new customer pulls into a Jiffy Lube today, the technician takes down the customer information on a paper form on a clipboard and then enters it again into the bay terminal. In the future, Jiffy Lube will use a handheld PC that will eliminate the data re-entry step. Re-entry takes only a minute, but it increases the chance of an error, and meanwhile, the customer is waiting. At Microsoft, we realized immediate, dramatic improvements as soon as we switched from taking customer orders by fax to taking orders digitally. Our application for digital ordering, named MOE, for Microsoft Order Entry Tool, quickly evolved into an advanced website for electronic commerce worldwide. MOE makes it easy for our distributors to enter their orders digitally by either creating orders online or uploading them in batch files. Because MOE has all of the part numbers and validates all orders, order entry errors have dropped from 75% to zero, and the distributor's order is priced automatically. Distributors can find delivery dates, other products, and services at the MOE website, too. Today, the MOE site, which handled $3.4 billion in revenues in 1998, runs neck and neck with Cisco Systems' order site as the highest revenue processing website in the world. Once MOE is captured and verified an order, it's electronically routed to the appropriate Microsoft Regional Manufacturing System for fulfillment. Our manufacturing plants use the MOE information to automatically generate product build schedules, saving time that used to go into manually creating manufacturing schedules. There's no way we could have achieved this related benefit if we hadn't had the data in digital form. Making data digital from the start can trigger a whole range of positive events. The Coca-Cola Company, whose information systems are described in more detail in the next chapter, is collecting data directly from smart vending machines via cellular phone or infrared signals. These machines, already in use in Japan and Australia, transmit such information as the number of cans dispensed, coin status, and any leakage problems. A PC restocking program at the local bottler office analyzes the data and produces a delivery slip that tells drivers which products and locations need to get stocked the next day. Need-based delivery in Australia has reduced the number of out-of-stock machines on any given day from 20% to less than 1%, which improves Coke's sales. Drivers are happy, too. They get paid by the case, and their productivity has risen 50%. This efficiency in managing its stocking and routes has Coca-Cola on track to double its Middle and Far East business in 3 to 5 years without adding more bottlers. Taking advantage of digital data at its source can even create new business opportunities for a mature market such as soft drink sales. Panels on new Coke vending machines use interactive technology to display commercials, weather reports, even subway maps. A pilot program in Texas lets customers use a credit or debit card to pay for Coke drinks while fueling at a gas station. Since most people who pay at the pump don't go into the building, the digital sales system at the pump creates a whole segment of new customers for Coke. Speeding and expanding the sales process. Siemens Information and Communication Networks, part of the global technology giant Siemens AG, is a leader in telecommunications systems used inside a company, known as a private branch exchange, or PBX. Each customer selects from an array of options for PBX equipment to create an internal phone system customized to its needs. Siemens has created a fully digital sales process system that quickly provides quotes, captures and adjusts order information going in, ensures parts compatibility, and drives order information all the way through to the company's manufacturing process. In the early 1990s, Siemens's complex product configurations required a salesperson to assemble a lot of intricate detail before presenting a quote. Every quote involved engineering, which had to ensure that the parts in an order would be compatible. Any change order was complex, wasting sales time and often leading to a start over in manufacturing that would delay customer delivery. To resolve these problems, Siemens put together a team of some 200 people, representing sales, systems engineering, customer support, manufacturing, logistics, finance, and IT, to develop a new set of tools to make the sales process go faster and easier. The team came up with a set of PC-based applications called CRAFT, or Customer Requirements and Fulfillment Tools. CRAFT enables salespeople to develop and present a variety of quotes to customers without the need for detailed calculations or engineering analysis up front. Engineers who used to work on order configurations can now spend their time developing new products. With CRAFT, a salesperson can compile an order in under an hour, instead of in several hours, with greater accuracy. Less time with the tool means salespeople have more time to spend with customers. CRAFT provides a set of selection criteria that graphically display what components go together, reconciling any parts incompatibilities as the salesperson creates the order, so that a final order can be logged, configured, and booked in real time. Used by 400 to 500 sales representatives nationwide, CRAFT passes orders directly to the manufacturing system. This direct path reduces sales order errors and, in turn, decreases the number of change orders, saving significant costs. Previously, change orders would come in throughout the production process, sometimes until the product was almost out the door. Discounts are no longer attached to a specific option. Rather, they are integrated into the total order and are automatically adjusted as parts are added to or dropped from the order. Manufacturing employees are better able to plan for long lead items and receive much more consistent data sooner. Prompt data has reduced the time to produce a small system from 5 or 6 days to less than 3 days. Emergency requests can be met in less than 24 hours. CRAFT has contributed to a significant increase in sales without the addition of sales representatives. Customers driving business. Digital data gives you higher-level business benefits, too. Capturing and analyzing digital data in real time can create an information cycle between a business, its partners, and its customers that can reshape a company's entire behavior. Retailer Marks & Spencer, a British institution with 300 stores in the United Kingdom and another 400 around the world, cycles customer information to respond immediately to consumer preferences and to achieve the kind of personalized service that's impossible to get at a typical supermarket chain. Marks & Spencer is tying itself closely to customer buying patterns so that those patterns will drive its business processes in real time. Marks & Spencer sells a unique mix of dry goods, mostly clothing, housewares, and gourmet foods, throughout most of the English-speaking world. It operates Brooks Brothers in the United States. Total revenues in 1998 were £8.2 billion. Marks & Spencer's 15% profit is almost five times the median American retailer margin of 3.2% reported by Forbes magazine in 1998. The company attributes a large part of its success to its ability to use information to make its supply system highly responsive to customer needs. Only a few years ago, the company's information situation was run-of-the-mill. Like most retailers, Marks & Spencer's buyers ordered and allocated goods to stores according to their best judgments of what customers might like. The information system provided only a basic analysis of historical data to help. It was impossible to predict sales accurately enough to avoid either selling out of stock or having to discount or discard leftover inventory. Both outcomes hurt profitability. Its 1980s-era point-of-sale system could tell Marks & Spencer on a daily basis that the chain had sold, say, 3,000 navy blue suits, 10,000 French baguettes, and 300,000 roast beef sandwiches. But it couldn't tell the store who bought those sandwiches and suits, what else those customers bought, or how the customers paid for them. The system couldn't alert the company to whether customers were buying substitute items if the goods they originally wanted were sold out, or whether the purchases of regular customers were consistent with their typical buying patterns. The system couldn't help the store detect changing buying patterns as sales were happening during store hours. And when Marks & Spencer competitors were getting more aggressive on pricing and beginning to stay open later, some even 24 hours a day, its old batch processing system wouldn't allow Marks & Spencer to change prices in real time or extend store hours much beyond 9 p.m. As the chain opened stores in different time zones through the 1990s, it began to run out of dead time in which to crunch company-wide sales data. Finally, as its system vendors' customer base dwindled, Marks & Spencer bore more and more of the cost of development. When Marks & Spencer had to buy second-hand gear to get enough equipment, the company started looking for a better way. Determined not to be stuck with a single system supplier again, Marks & Spencer is outfitting its 300 UK stores with PC technology. That allowed competitive bidding on all aspects of its hardware and software solutions. Each store now has a central quad-processor PC server and 40 to 50 top-of-the-line Pentium II PCs acting as point-of-sale devices. Each of these PC tills runs a complete pricing database, so customers can buy any item at any location in the store. Socks in the food department, if they want. Because the workstations process sales faster than the old devices, Marks & Spencer needs fewer per store. The PCs are having no trouble keeping up with the millions of pounds a day in revenue that the largest stores take in. 15,000 transactions a minute across all stores. If anything else in the system fails, the tills keep running. Marks & Spencer piloted the new system in the peak Christmas season of 1996, and will finish rolling it out worldwide in 1999. Knowing customers through the sandwiches they buy. With its new digital infrastructure in place, Marks & Spencer is beginning to capture an incredible array of data on customer buying patterns. Data from each store is sent electronically to the main data center in London. Fully implemented, the dynamic flow of information will enable Marks & Spencer merchandisers to analyze purchases as they occur instead of waiting overnight. Marks & Spencer will be able to adjust stock throughout the day across the whole chain. Before, the company would stock its stores with gourmet sandwiches according to sales from the day before, and would have to make the sandwiches at night. The retailer's 400 food suppliers worldwide will be able to make less product initially and then complete the orders in response to regular sales reports from Marks & Spencer during the day. A store won't need to run out or end up with excess inventory, and customers get fresher consumables. The system will even get automatic feeds from local weather services and be able to make appropriate food stocking suggestions. Soup, maybe, if the forecast is for stormy weather, or meat for barbecue if the day will be sunny. A similar application of information technology enables Marks & Spencer to work closely with its more than 300 clothing manufacturers. When Marks & Spencer launches a dress in two colors, say red and blue, it quickly knows which one is selling better in which markets. Suppliers work on a just-in-time basis. They make smaller quantities initially and then tune production to actual sales. Other industries have used just-in-time techniques for manufacturing components and mechanical parts. Marks & Spencer is the first to apply just-in-time inventory techniques to perishable foods and well-tailored finished clothes. Marks & Spencer's growing database of specific customer data includes not only what item an individual customer bought on a particular day, but what else the buyer purchased in other departments and the time of day of the purchases. Marks & Spencer can aggregate this information to create highly targeted marketing initiatives. Knowing that British customers frequently buy strawberries and whipping cream together and coffee and cookies together, the company can promote and cross-sell the related items in store displays. Or Marks & Spencer can use the data on the individual level to make customer service a proactive invitation to do more shopping. Knowing that you're a lover of fine wines and seafood, the local store can send you a postcard, or one day an email, inviting you to a special wine tasting event, and send you a packet of complimentary seafood recipes. Knowing your preference for a certain designer's clothes, the store can let you know when the new styles from that designer arrive. Providing an objective starting point. The business side of any company starts and ends with hardcore analysis of its numbers. Whatever else you do, if you don't understand what's happening in your business factually and you're making business decisions based on anecdotal data or gut instinct alone, you'll eventually pay a big price. Microsoft is a product company, and I care deeply about product development, but anyone who has participated in a budget review with the executive committee at Microsoft knows that we insist on having accurate numbers and insightful analysis of those numbers. Numbers give you the factual basis for the directions in which you take your products. Numbers tell you in objective terms what customers like and don't like. Numbers help you identify your highest priorities so that you can take fast, tactical, or strategic action. There's no substitute for understanding your numbers at a working level. Sometimes my friend, Steve Ballmer, Microsoft's president, surprises the members of a product group by knowing their pricing schemes and sales numbers and the competitors, better than the people presenting a plan to him. He has a way of striding into a room and immediately asking the one question the team doesn't have an answer to. He's done his homework, and he's thought hard about the issues that come out of the numbers. He sets a high priority on fact-based decisions. The line managers at a company need to be doing the numerical analysis. Other groups can help, but the people who deal with customers and with competition problems need to be engaged in looking at their business in every way possible, every day. The analysis should always support action, not just more analysis. Analysis should lead you step by step to a decision and to action. You have to think, act, evaluate, adapt. Starting with digital numbers doesn't merely eliminate redundancy of effort and errors. It also sets in motion optimal ways to process the data afterward. Being digital from the outset drives efficiency in manufacturing, shipping, billing, and other operational processes. Getting the data digitally is also the only way to ensure that you get information quickly enough to respond to customer needs before your competitor does. This need for good, timely information to drive employees to quick action is one reason that paper numbers bother me as much as paper forms do. A printed sales figure or a printed number on customer trends is static. You don't have the ability to get in and see detail, or to email the number and its context off to somebody to talk about it. You can't analyze what's behind the number. With a paper number that looks out of whack, you have to get hold of somebody and say, "I'm looking at this report, and this number surprises me." A lot of the time, the anomaly is easily explained. Some customer has put in a big order or has backed one out. There's nothing actionable involved, but you still want to know quickly why the month's results looked skewed. If you spot a trend in a paper report, it's hard to send the paper around and get people to work together to dig into it. Over time, you stop paying close attention because it's so hard to investigate. When figures are in electronic form, knowledge workers can study them, annotate them, look at them in any amount of detail or in any view they want, and pass them around for collaboration. A number on a piece of paper is a dead end. A number in digital form is the start of meaningful thought and action. Extending your business. Going digital changes your business. Without a modern information system, an oil change company would have no chance of expanding its services, using well-timed specials to entice customers, or offering special promotions to targeted customers. Coke's ventures with smart vending machines are a good example of starting digital and also of creating a new business model. Coke vending machines are evolving into self-managed stores, able to advertise their own wares, offer their own promotions, and order their own supplies or merchandise. None of that would be possible without a digital starting point. Smart machines communicating from remote locations will become more and more common. Spinning a web of partnerships. Digital technology also enables a company to create a web of partnerships that serves its customers better. You can create a virtual company in which commerce, knowledge, management, and operational systems integrate everyone. Your partners are better integrated with you, benefit more from your success, and are naturally driven to respond to the same precisely tracked patterns of customer behavior that you are. When your information systems are designed to promote a flow of information to and from your customers, the business processes of the entire supply system will naturally align in efficient directions. Just-in-time delivery can be a reality for any industry. Digital information flow makes it possible for a company to create a boundaryless organization, but it takes a new corporate mindset and culture to turn suppliers from them into us. In the traditional business model, suppliers have often been merely tolerated for what they provided, but were not treated as an integral part of the overall business process needed to serve customers. The old phrase, supply chain, implies links in a linear relationship, looking back from the retailer to distribution to transportation to manufacturing. Today's approach is that of a value network, a web of partnerships enabled by digital information flow. Everyone who touches the product must add value, and communications go both forward as well as back. Companies in the value network aren't restricted to their places in line by heavy chains of process, but can interact and do business with multiple vendors as they need to. Walmart began the change in how major buyers viewed their suppliers, giving Procter & Gamble access to its sales data so that Procter & Gamble could do what it does best, manage inventory and distribution, and Walmart could do what it does best, sell lots of products. This degree of openness is the only way to get the full benefit of freely flowing numbers. Walmart, according to Forbes, reduced its expenses by $2 billion in 1997 through better inventory management. Much of this savings came from its continuing drive to use information to work better with its supplier partners. Marks and Spencer has demonstrated that information sharing not only reduces costs, but can also reduce reaction time to just a few hours anywhere in the world. General Electric's CEO, Jack Welch, was one of the first people to talk about boundarylessness, the idea that solutions to business problems should encompass everyone in the critical path, whether inside or outside the formal borders of the corporation. Not surprisingly, GE, the largest diversified industrial company in the United States, has begun to create for its 12 operating units what will probably become the largest extranet in the world. An extranet is a private internet site that enables several companies to securely share information and conduct business. GE expects to do more than $5 billion, or 14% of its projected $35 billion in capital procurements over the extranet by 2001, compared with less than 1% in electronic purchases today. Fully deployed, the extranet could involve as many as 40,000 trading partners. In addition to being a system for straight transactions, GE's extranet will include software that enables real-time collaboration. GE employees and partners will be able to view and edit the same electronic documents and to discuss them at the same time over the internet. In a value network, companies can free up capital that would otherwise be tied up in inventory and dramatically reduce inventory management costs, as Walmart has done. GE expects to save between $500 million and $750 million with its extranet through reduced errors, contract leverage, and other efficiencies. Companies can improve quality, too. About 70% of the value of Ford's products comes from components provided by independent parts manufacturers, and Ford's digital network enables the company to quickly work with these suppliers to address quality issues with parts. Companies in a value network can respond faster and more accurately to the market. Doing more digital information work. If the benefits of knowing your numbers and creating a value network are so compelling, why don't more companies do it? Why don't more companies develop their aggregate numbers digitally to track trends? Why don't they track customer history? The main reason is that too few businesses start with digital input. Grocery stores were among the first to go digital at the point of origin. The original use of scanners was to speed up checkout, but the more important business value became inventory management and trend analysis. Starting with digital data requires diligence, though. If six packs of soft drinks are on special for $1.99, a checker might key in two for a six-pack, even if one is a Dr. Pepper and the other a Pepsi. The customer's price total will be correct, but the inventory numbers for both beverage brands will be off. Connecting digital data among vendors using mainframe-based computers and private networks has also been too expensive. Even though the benefits of data exchange are obvious, less than 5% of all U.S. businesses use the old EDI standard. Sometimes only one side of the transaction is electronic. EDI to fax is a common approach. And most of that 5% are using EDI just for purchase orders and invoicing. They aren't exchanging sales and logistics data to optimize inventory and transportation management. Cost and technical complexity have been holding people back, but the PC and the internet give us an infrastructure that makes exchanging all kinds of digital information very inexpensive. The more homogeneous the software platform, the less complex the connectivity issues, and the better able you are to form a value network. Not enough people are using digital data in the office. Existing paper systems lead people to assume that data is hard to get and customize. Because their data isn't digital, they have to work with stacks of paper they can't navigate or analyze. They can't find patterns in their data. They can't turn their paper information into action. Because so few companies are using digital tools internally or with partners today, those firms that act quickly to create a digital nervous system have the opportunity to jump ahead of their competitors. To make the transition to an empowered virtual enterprise, a CEO needs to look first at all of the paper on desks of knowledge workers and ask, how could digital systems get rid of these stacks of paper? As part of this examination, think of your business processes as extending far beyond your walls to encompass the entire web of your partnerships and your customers. You need to develop business processes supported by a swift, reliable flow of information that will enable the customer to drive your responses and the responses of all your vendors as if you were one entity. If you find your efforts to link up with your partners and your customers to be more focused on costs and just keeping things running, and less on building solutions that add business value, evaluate your technical underpinnings. You need to step back and come up with a new approach. Business lessons. Knowing your numbers is more than balancing your books each month. It's being able to use data for marketing and sales, as well as for financial purposes. A number on a piece of paper is a dead end. A number in digital form is the start of meaningful thought and action. Quick, accurate numbers make it possible for customer actions to drive an immediate response by you and your partners. Diagnosing your digital nervous system. Do your digital systems capture your business's data at the point of origin and in every interaction with your customers and partners? Can you integrate your partners' numbers with yours? Do you have a complete customer database that you take full advantage of? Chapter 13. Shift people into thinking work. We view this pile of data as an asset to be learned from. The bigger the pile, the better, if you have the tools to analyze it, synthesize it, and make yourself more creative. Britt Mayo, Director of Information Technology, Pennzoil. The inevitable consequence of better computer systems is a smarter use of people's time. With intelligent software continuously scanning through its sales data, tracking trends, and noticing what's selling and what's not, Marks & Spencer can use its 500 to 600 buyers far more effectively. Instead of plowing through fat paper reports from the previous day to try to determine whether sales are going well, the buyers can spend their time more effectively to capitalize on what up-to-the-minute data is telling them. If sales are proceeding as desired, no human intervention is needed. But the new system monitors sales data and flags items whose sales fall above or below preset bounds. Exception reports are created automatically, and buyers handle only